Thanks for listening to The Treatment. So I bet you're curious about what gadget you'll be using next, or maybe you're like me, you just want to visit the most cutting-edge museums. So KCRW is a podcast, DNA, that sheds light on the culture and trends in design and architecture, hosted by an industry insider. Check it out. I think you'll dig it. Find DNA on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. My guest is ACTO and fellow Cuban aficionado, Jack O'Connell, who is in a series of movies from This Is England to his newest film, Unbroken, has done a number of films, and Harry Brown. We even had Michael Caine here talking about Harry Brown. We've played guys, you've often played these guys who have an interesting way of dealing with violence in movies. What is it that makes you kind of comfortable with that?
Okay, so I feel able to indulge further than usual in this environment. You know, I respond to this question usually with trained answers that suggest that, you know, I'm quite humble and get what I'm given. And which is partly true, you know, with the early stage of my career, there are only certain roles that I would be offered or being taken seriously for. I'm not sure if it is purely coincidence that the majority of them roles did involve some version of violence. But I do recall, you know, growing up and being young and watching dramas, watching films, and finding often in most cases performances a little inadequate, particularly if they were set on street level, you know, because the majority of actors aren't from street level. And so, yeah, I was very keen to collaborate that world with whenever we was portraying that world on camera and keep that as authentic as possible. So, yeah, and look, I'll put that down to growing up in where violence was quite a regularity. There was a currency in it, or that it would be used effectively, actually. You know, it would settle disputes, or I grew up with gypsy travellers, so I'd be schooled with them. And they don't sue each other, they don't take each other to court, they meet up and fight about it, and it's all organised and what have you. So, yeah, I guess there's quite a nonchalant view on violence, while I was growing up anyway. And so, that, you know, if I was ever able to introduce that into my work, I was always keen to keep them elements organic.
When I met you a few weeks ago, I was telling you how terrific I thought you were in 71, which is coming up early in 2015 here in the States. It's set in Belfast in 1971. He's a character who understands what violence is. I mean, and these guys you play at some point make their decision about how they're going to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's something that you're able to draw upon it too in some way, that you decide if you're going to do it or not.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd always like to concentrate on the distinctions between the characters. If there are themes that are continuous, then I mean, I'd consider that a fault of mine.
How do you mean? Why is that a fault?
Because every character I like to approach as a total individual, separately from what I've done before. The trouble is there, particularly in a professional realm, is you're only trusted with certain amounts, and that's how typecasting can then breed. Is because, you know, you kind of play into your strengths while you've got to make the most of what you've got, you know, when you're building a career anyway. And so, yeah, I like I say, I reevaluate. And, you know, in 71, his response to violence was, he was perhaps a little more accustomed to it, but he never really considered himself overly capable. He didn't have that bravado. When I was doing Startup, set in a prison, That is an important part of the uniform for the character. You know, a disregard for his personal safety or pain barrier, should we say. And, you know, I'm not interested in two dimension either. You know, I always think within every character there are layers. And even if certain things don't surface, it's interesting to discover what is actually happening underneath. You know, and essentially it's fear. You know, essentially it's a mask for fear. And as I say, I can recall quite directly considering certain people in my upbringing, in my surrounding, quite honourable with their approach with violence, you know. in means of defence. And there is an honour in that, I guess. And in our society today as well, particularly in, I guess, well-to-do areas, we're protected a lot from violence. It's a hysteria against it, you know, or surrounding it. But no, I'm of the opinion that, you know, it was quite normal growing up. You know, the idea that if you said something wrong, it could earn you a slap or worse. And I'm not sure if that did me any harm, actually. You know, growing up within that parameter, it certainly benefited me as an actor anyway, you know.
And these are all guys, often guys, I'm going to say certainly Startup and Louis and Unbroken are guys who don't react with violence in violent situations, which is really interesting. And it makes me wonder how much of you get to bring to something like this.
I always try and, as I say, I try and remove myself as much as possible.
Sure.
Maybe I'm not that seasoned an actor yet where I'm able to do that at my disposal. But I certainly try and disguise myself within a role. And the key to that is just, you know, study who you're playing. I mean, Louis was in predicaments where he was being tormented and physically abused.
Which sounds a lot like the way you're talking about you came up a little bit, that sort of situation of having to figure out how you defend yourself and when you defend yourself.
Yeah, and decisions that I've personally had to make in my own life, actually, and my perspective now on what violence is and what costs violence actually have for me in my life now, whereas before I didn't really have much to lose. You know, now I feel like I've got... You know, I'd really suffer if I was to jeopardise all of this. So then, yeah, my approach has to change. My attitude has to change. And I have to see the victory in walking away from them confrontational situations now. Even if I do have to look, you know, emasculated in doing so, I'll take the hit there.
Does that seem like what it is for you, though? Does it feel like it's...
Emasculating?
Yeah.
Once upon a time there was a... some unwritten code of honour that meant that if you did shy away from them confrontational scenarios, then you were less of a man, apparently. And that's how we defined ourselves once. But I mean, like I say, it was there, but we weren't fascinated about it. That was just the code. You know, we didn't all take each other seriously within it. You know, this wasn't, we weren't all... Yeah, formerly we were just young lads growing up and quite bored. And then, you know about football violence at home as well and the culture that breeds and all of these things. I was really susceptible to it all once. I was quite impressionable growing up and I wanted to identify myself as a man. And now I feel like I do through other means, you know, who I am to my family, for instance. Not who I defend myself against. And maybe that is similar to Louis. But like I say, Louis was from another period, another era, and he was put in situations, certainly during his captivity, where if he did respond with violence, if he did retaliate, it pretty much would ensure his execution. So you know, he was in another predicament where, yeah, I guess he was forced into... withstanding somehow, and that's a million miles away from whatever I've had to endure.
Well, my guest, who's not a million miles away from me right now, sitting across from me, is The Treatment, is Jack O'Connell. His new film as actor is Unbroken, but he's in a few films. I guess I have to ask you, what was it like for you the first time you walked into a movie set as an actor? What did it feel like to you?
Well, my first film experience was with Shane Meadows on
This Is England.
Yeah. And his style of shooting, I later discovered, was a very unconventional one. I had nothing else to compare it with, so I was very hopeful that every project would be as improvisational-based and spontaneous as Shane likes to work. You know, for example, we wouldn't see cameras on set till 10 a.m. because we'd have spent the majority of the morning rehearsing. So it was our environment, you know, it was an actor's medium. And then you go on from that and then you work on perhaps more schedule-based, camera-based shooting styles.
Traditional shooting styles, we should say. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you realise where the discipline has to come into effect, and you know how your process is compromised in doing so, particularly starting on This Is England with Shane, who, like I say, was primarily interested in the actors.
Because I wonder if you ever watched Michael Caine as a kid as you were coming up and then getting to work with him, and there's a kind of a similar quiet intensity between the two of you guys. When you're not talking, there's a lot going on. And Harry Brown, there's a lot of... you have a particularly interesting scene when you get to work with him near the end of the film. And I wonder what it was like shooting that with him, with Michael Caine.
Phenomenal. You're very, very young, I was, during that. And I think I just lost my dad. I think that was the first job I had after losing my father. If I've calculated that right in my memory. So, you know, I was quite lost. I was, you know, I mean, personally, where my head was at, you know, I'd lost my identity and my confidence and essentially my dad. And so yeah, I was doing my best to remain focused, and thankfully I had this outlet, this art form, where I was able to input whatever I might be having to comprehend at the time. So, yeah, I remember feeling quite awestruck, but I remember my dad being a big Caine fan, and so I wanted to make him proud. And I knew I wasn't going to do that by chewing Michael Caine's ear off about how much of a fan I am of his, or my dad subsequently. So I just wanted to do the job, and I went in there with that attitude, and he spent the majority of the day torturing me. And in the scene, we had the idea that I'd spit at him. And I think it was when he was so flippant about the idea of me spitting at him repeatedly. He didn't seem to care. Even while he was off camera, he was insisting that I'd spit at him. And then you kind of realise that you're dealing with, you know, grassroots. You know, started from the bottom, found his way where he is, and, you know, still has that mentality where he's willing to get his hands dirty. And so after this day, we'd finished the scene and I felt like I did an all right performance, and God knows I had plenty of grief in my own life to draw from anyway, so I was allowed to introduce that. And the director asked Michael Caine what he thought about me, which I guess in hindsight is a little unprofessional, but thankfully he responded positively. And he said, star of the future, is how he put it. So I remember them words well.
Well, you must have felt some kind of kinship with him, because like you were saying, you both come from pretty similar backgrounds, and introducing kind of a real-world thing to acting. He even said the same thing himself, as, you know, you'd see these guys who were trying to do basically the same guy he was, the same guy he grew up as, and it didn't seem real to him either. Mm. It seemed inauthentic.
Okay, that's interesting. I recently watched A Streetcar Named Desire, mm-hmm. and in that you see Brando really kind of test the parameters of performance and reality, naturalism and drama, something acted. And I do think there's a happy medium. More often the case, it favours naturalism, depending on the world that you're in or the portrayal itself. But I always try and strive for the reality. And I think that might have been born from frustration in watching other actors try and achieve the same and fail. You know, without naming names, there are a series of actors that taught me how not to act. And that was just as vital as the people that did, you know, that taught me to act.
We're going to take a break. My guest is Jack O'Connell. He's going to write down the names of those actors during the break, but we won't reveal them to you. It's the treatment. This one to come. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Browse the KCRW store and shop for vacations, wine classes, frequent flyer miles, dinners, and merchandise. Shop to support KCRW only at kcrw.com/store.
Welcome back to The Treatment. We're talking totems during the break. My guest is Jack O'Connell. His new film as actor is Unbroken. I wonder, in a case like this, you watch the movies, you sat down with your director, Angelina Jolie, you guys talked about films. Did you watch movies, or did she suggest things to you, or things like that?
So, yeah, numerous. which is a way of working that I'm particularly wary of.
Because you don't want to copy somebody else, is that part of it?
Yeah. I like to consider what we're working towards our own beast, which is separate to anything else. But there is a lot to be said for inspiration. And as long as that is, you know, separate from imitation and you're working towards being inspired as opposed to merely copying, then you're on the right lines. With Louis Zamperini and the making of Unbroken, we all had to be fairly inspired. So this was one case where the homework that we were given was actually useful. So I was watching films like Papillion and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, just to help me with the institutionalisation elements, the, you know, how that might affect your psychology, etc. The Wall, an old film called The Wall.
Pink Floyd's The Wall, directed by Alan Parker.
Is that him? Right. Yes. I didn't know the director.
Yeah, big inspiration on Christopher Nolan, by the way, that director.
I see. Which it is. It's a stunning film. You know, it's quite a grueling watch. Bridge Over the River Kwai, of course. The Great Escape. Well, I just ended up enjoying that as an audience member.
So you got to watch two Steve McQueen films preparing for this.
That's right. And the other fella as well, Paul Newman. I watched
Cool Hand Luke.
Cool Hand Luke. And I think that was more, gave us an idea of the palette that Roger would be shooting with or trying to achieve that classic, slightly grainy kind of feel on screen, which really suits the period we were shooting in. And it meant that I was running around the set in Roger Deakin's earshot a lot of the time going, "We're making a classic, Roger. Making a classic." He must have just thought I was so naive and audacious.
Well, you might have thought you were having a good time with it. But these movies you were naming is interesting because you're talking about realism, but you're talking about a lot of big movie star performances. You have Dustin Hoffman and Steve McQueen, or you got that great cast of The Great Escape. You got Paul Newman and Strother Martin going toe-to-toe, a relationship that's very similar, in fact, to the relationship in Unbroken, the relationship that Newman has with the warden there, with the gang boss. Mm-hmm. Is this a very similar relationship, isn't it?
Well, and also the technicalities of shooting in this way. You know, Hollywood filmmaking has been around in Hollywood for a lot longer than I've been around for.
Okay, I'm going to take your word at that. I don't really know.
So there are preset systems, though, that I have to adhere to. You know, however naturalistic based I like to consider myself, I kind of have to meet them halfway. So there are times where on camera you feel totally unnatural and almost compromised. But the time you see it on screen, you realise it's a case of perspectives. So where Roger's got his camera in that case, you know, it might register as quite ordinary. Or beautiful, even, you know, from an audience point of view. But, you know, it's often the time where you're in front of the camera and you're literally being placed and told where to turn and exactly where to look. And it just feels like the most unnatural thing, you're somehow trying to find a truth in. And you use the term movie star performances. So I had to find that balance, I guess, with Unbroken.
It's funny as you're saying this, I find myself wondering if you can watch yourself in your movies and those moments that feel unnatural to you, how that affects you when you see them.
If it doesn't stop the show and if it's not, you know, too noticeable, then you just have to put it down to experience and tell yourself, okay, moving forward from here, maybe it was beneficial that I learned that about myself. But the past three projects I've done, I've found quite comfortable. Be it being, you know, in the audience of, and it's been comfortable viewing, which isn't always a case I feel fortunate for.
Really? It's not always the case for you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, some cases often not. Once or twice I've walked away quite disappointed.
But those are learning experiences for you, I suspect, too, are they not?
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And it's important that they happen, you know.
Well, I guess, though, I wonder if, because you're still a young man and you started at such a young age, you can see the sort of evolution of yourself as an actor and watching these movies, saying, oh, I learned how to not do that, or just my comfort level is different, or watching Harry Brown, you get to revisit that awful time in your life. I mean, if these movies are in some weird way kind of like scrolling through shots on your phone, and they kind of recall these emotional states for you.
In some way, I'm very thankful, actually, that I had 10 years to build an experience and an awareness as to what it is to act before Angelina Jolie beckoned for Unbroken. So thankfully I had all of that experience to draw from. You know, it'd be a totally different case altogether if Unbroken was my first film, because there's some things that you can only learn on the job. And thankfully I was given time to do that. But not only on film, you know, in my life too. You know, I see where, I guess, I can instantly recall what mentality I had growing up. And to be here now reflecting on that does seem a little far-fetched, you know, but I'd always wanted to put myself here. So the life's lessons. But I'm very grateful to be 24 and feel like I've got, you know, some life experience anyway, which is useful for my work. And like I say, I feel very measured for it all.
It's a treat. We're talking to a guy who clearly has a good sense for himself, my friend Jack O'Connell, fellow Cuban aficionado. It's the treatment, talking about his new film, Unbroken, a number of other things too. But I guess I'm trying not to make you feel self-conscious about this, because you're obviously still figuring things out. And we were talking about playing Marky in that scene in Harry Brown. That character is going through a lot of transitions in that really concentrated time. And you, like you were saying, you're still trying to get a sense of yourself. Mm-hmm. You just lost an important part of your life, probably asking yourself some questions about where you were going. I'm just wondering, if you're talking about realism, that becomes a way to, if you go from time to time, evoking these things that help you find these characters. Uh-huh. You know?
Yeah, I guess in some regards it is a therapy in many senses. And that's how I thankfully chose to look at it as a kid. You know what? I knew that there was some therapeutic in channeling whatever I was feeling into the characters I was playing. And, you know, thankfully I was able to make my mind up about that very, very young and understand what it is to portray a character and disconnect me as much as I can while I play that character. And in doing so, putting my life on hold. So all my personal interests, you know, I think most of my personal interests, with the exception of football and family, gets put totally on hold. So, you know, while I'm building my career, in the hope that one day I'd find myself in this position where I now get the luxury of choice, I was prioritising my work, so I was putting my life on hold. And, I'm really grateful I did that. I'm really grateful I was young enough to make that assessment. It was maturer beyond my years. But I did it. That was the decision I made, and that was the approach that I had towards my work as a youngster. And thankfully it served me well. But there were times where you're a little agitated, you know. Maybe your friends are going on vacation for the third time and I haven't been with them once, you know, and they're really defining their adolescence. And I'm doing night shoots in some rough estate in Essex under a rain machine, running away from Michael Caine.
Do you like the level of commitment that this calls from? You seem to really be into that kind of thing that it demands from you, the sort of amount of time and the amount of concentration. You seem to really respond to that.
Well, the nature of it is maybe, you know, 6 months, 7 months on, and you get like 3 months off. I'm really cool with that equation. You know, if you pedal to metal and working, you know, breaking your back for 6 months, and then you're rewarded with your own time, total relaxation and time to separate yourself from the last job and then look forward to the next. I'm all right with them figures, you know. I think I'd much more struggle in something a little more unrelenting like that. But don't get me wrong, film shoots do figure out a way to get it out of you. They'll pull you out of bed, you know, early doors, and figure out an excuse as to why that's legal. And you won't be seeing that bed again until way past dark, and you just better stop prioritising your own needs for a little bit.
Let me ask you this. You're talking about your attitudes and some of these things some of these guys, these characters have gone through. Is it important for you to find a way to like these characters that you play?
Nah.
Okay.
Nah. I mean, even, you know, if the story warrants it and this said character could instigate some hatred, as long as I understand that hatred, I don't feel like it would at all put me off portraying. As long as the film itself was integral and the message essentially was a good one, a beneficial one, then for sure, yeah, I don't need to respect them even.
Interesting, really. So Pookie and this is England, I mean, did you respect him at all? Or?
In fact, I did, because he wasn't a racist. He wasn't...
Because that's an interesting world he's a part of. That's that beginning of the skinhead movement.
Exactly, and the common misconception as well that was a result in that later wave of Nazi skinhead culture, which I guess began in prisons and, in my opinion, was a result of Thatcherite Britain really penalising the working classes and creating tensions and eradicating hope. But prior to that was the unity, was the Scar movement, the two-tone movement, and all that was so much more important to me than decisions made by Pukey. And I think he made some right ones. You know, I stand by the decisions Pukey made, particularly on his way back from that National Front meeting. He gets a voice there. And fair play to Shane as well for at least decorating that, you know, the diverse opinions, the diverse feelings that people had at that time for interracial integration and what have you. It was interesting. Again, that's a good example, Elvis, because the overall message in the film doesn't propagate any evil like that. It highlights what it is for what it is, and we get to make our own opinion on that, which should be a negative one. And so, yeah, should that repeat itself, you know? Or in another example, should another opportunity like that arise? Yeah, I don't mind being hated by an audience for the sake of drama.
And, you know, that, again, we're getting back to where we started, because we're coming to our time here, because we can see sort of a connection, or at least relationships, I should say, between Pukey and between Louis and Unbroken. We have to decide, when these terrible things are going on around you, how you're going to deal with it. And to some extent, that's about figuring out what kind of man you're going to be, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Coming of age, yeah. I hate cliches usually, but coming of age is one that reoccurs in my thinking. The age that I'm at means that I'm eligible mainly for adolescent roles.
But I wasn't going to say coming of age as much as these are often projects about guys who think they're one kind of man, and by the end they've arrived at the conclusion of being another kind of man.
Should we say boys? Boy, the beginner's boys? I don't know.
Yeah, because maybe they're boys, but I think they're boys who have an idea what manhood is.
Uh-huh, okay.
They're very much, you know what I mean? They think they know what it's like to be an adult, and by the end of this path, they go, oh, no, there's more than one way.
Uh-huh.
And the idea of making a choice, and you're talking about your own life having to make a choice.
Yeah, I get this every week. I feel like a new man every week. I'm made to feel like a born-again something anyway. Weekly.
Well, I'm going to leave my newborn friend to go have the rest of his day. I can't thank you enough for doing this, Jack.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the cigar, Elvis. You're a good man anyway. I look forward to seeing you again, mate.
Well, please come back anytime. You're welcome. My guest is Jack O'Connell. He plays Louis Zamperini in the film Unbroken. Our recording engineer who also mixes the show is Melissa Morton. It's edited and produced by Jenny Radlett. I may go have a smoke myself. It's a treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.